set.
The Antioch Podcast.
Conversations about biblical anti-racism.
Have mercy.
Let me say it one more time.
The Antioch Podcast.
The Antioch Podcast is a ministry of Preach System.
Oh, I got Jesus, yay.
Hello, welcome to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. My name is Eric Nykamp. The Antioch Podcast takes its name from the ancient city of Antioch, the first multi-ethnic church mentioned in the Bible in Acts 11. Because they had no single ethnic identifier, Romans who mocked followers of the way in Antioch called them little Christs or Christians. A name which those early believers soon adopted as a badge of pride. Because of Antioch's location on what became known as the Silk Road, Christians in Antioch were instrumental in spreading Christianity throughout the world for centuries. Our podcast is hosted by a multicultural team of Christian anti-racism educators and friends, and biblical anti-racism is the starting point of all our conversations. Let's go now and listen to today's conversation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Antioch Podcast. Today on the podcast, we are answering the question, what does church renewal and racial justice look like in a Trump America? We have some thoughts about that, and we hope you'll stick around to listen. In all of our conversations, we believe that representation matters. So we're going to take just a moment before we dive into that conversation to introduce the members from our multi-ethnic team who are gathered here around the mic so you know just what's going on. As we go around, we will each share our name and our racial ethnic identifier. I'll get us started with the introductions, and after all the introductions, we will get back to today's discussion. All right, so I am Michelle, and I identify as an African-American woman, and...
I am Xiao Chong, but I go by Chong. That's my last name. And I identify as Chinese-Canadian.
And Reggie Smith, and I identify as African-American male.
All right. We are a smaller part of our team today, but it's still going to be a very lively conversation. Again, our question for the day, which serves as our topic, is what does church renewal and racial justice look like in Trump America? So I have this question to come after this question. When you hear this term Trump America, what does that convey to you? For our listeners, there's these deep breaths and pauses. What does that say to you? What does Trump America convey to you?
Maybe I'll go ahead first.
Yeah,
we'll hear from our Canadian brother.
Yeah,
first.
I'm Canadian, so I would say that most Canadians, the majority of Canadians, when we are thinking about Trump America, two words come to mind, the phrase elbows up.
Oh.
Have you heard of the phrase elbows up?
No.
No, well, that's,
never heard that before.
That's something in Canada, Canadians are all saying right now. You see it in memes on social media, you got t-shirts and baseball caps saying elbows up.
What does it mean?
It's originate from a hockey, ice hockey phrase. When a player puts their elbows up, is to defend themselves.
Oh,
it's a defensive
I have to get a
move.
New t-shirt.
Yeah, it's a defensive move against an opponent. They're coming fast at you, trying to be aggressive against you. You know, they're going to put your elbows up, basically fight back. Defend yourselves, be aggressive, stay tough and be strong and defend yourself and don't get knocked over. That's basically it. And so that phrase is going around in Canada. It's what Canadians, most Canadians right now are thinking when it comes to Trump America. So I just guess this probably gives you in a nutshell what comes to mind. We think of Trump America as an aggressor, as not as a friend anymore that we could trust, but as somebody that we gotta keep our elbows up.
That is profound. Not surprising.
Sadly, but that's why it is now. Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to have to borrow that phrase.
Elbows up.
Yeah, I'll tag in on that. I think of it as, well, it's interesting, right? So aggressor comes to mind as well, and just chaotic comes to mind as well, and a walk back of so many things that I think we had accomplished or were on the way of accomplishing. But to hear, you know, another country saying, yeah, just an aggressor, get your elbows up. This is no longer, not even a frenemy, because we're not even going to put a friend in there. This is someone we need to be in a defensive posture. So that's going out. I think of the aggression that's happening within the nation as well. When I think of a Trump America, that it's the no group is safe, except maybe rich white male billionaires. But apart from that, no group is really safe. And those who have been historically marginalized are even more marginalized. And it really is a sense of, where are we? You know, we are not in Kansas anymore. We are, lack of justice.
Yeah. I guess I go back to that magical year of 2016, of when Trump was elected, and how that really kind of ushered in even before his winning, which was supposed to not happen, and then it happened, and all the shock that came about, and then there was the, oh, he's not going to really act on that stuff, and then he did. He acted on it, and it became it was really like a watershed moment, because I remember coming to church after the election, and for a lot of African Americans, we were confused and we were baffled because when we heard that 81% of white evangelicals had voted for Trump, and being in a multiracial church, it really, we had to put our elbows up, because we didn't know who to trust anymore. We didn't know who really had our back, because that vote really just kind of derailed this entire that multiracial churches were supposed to be the answer to a post-racial America. And it really reversed it and said, we have no idea who's got our back, who's on our side. And then we saw the erosions of, as Michelle has already mentioned, of hard-fought legislative and lawful rights that were now being challenged. Yeah. And so it really set us on edge of that we had no idea if Trump was going to be, take that back. It really set the day that Trump was not for us. Yeah. And we really had to reevaluate the entire idea of church renewal in terms of, as the numbers were turning towards people of color and away from and the decrease in the white population, really kind of set that in conflict with one another. Can the two actually coexist? And that became even more complicated after 2016.
Yeah. And I go ahead, John.
Can I just add too that bringing it into the Christian the connection between Trump America and Christianity, Canadians, Christians especially, also seeing sort of have this reaction towards the Christian support of Trump as well, and all that Trump signifies, so to speak, and the policies of Trump and whatnot. There's a book that was published 2025, I believe, or 2024. Blessed Are the Undone is the title of the book. It's done by two of my friends, Peter Sherman and Angela Bick. They basically kind of interviewed and looked at people who are deconstructing their faith, right? Deconstructing the Christian faith, and looking at it specifically at Canadians here, and the Canadian data about deconstruction, and they come up with about 7 or 5, you know, reasons, common reasons or triggers that people have for deconstructing. But one of them, right, one of those 7 is Trumpism, and white Christian nationalism is one of the 7 or 5 key reasons that the Canadian Christians whom they have interviewed across Canada say, you know, it's one of the reasons why we are losing our faith. We are losing our faith in Christianity, or we're losing our faith in the church. Or, you know, and they come from evangelical backgrounds, mostly, most of them. And they're saying, you know, we had to rethink what we believe in anymore now because of all this, because of what has happened, what they see happening in the States.
That's again profound, right? Because I can see it happening here in the United States, especially younger generations who are like, look, this is what Christianity is. I don't want any part of it. Where's the justice? Where's the standing up? How can you do this and still, you know, call yourselves Christian? We don't want any part of it. But to hear that that's having an impact across the borders as well, that one, it speaks to how fluid, right, the gospel is in terms of like it can go anywhere. And just as the gospel can go anywhere, calling people to Christ, things that are working against that message also can go anywhere and draw people away or can shake people's faith because the way that people are practicing it, which is really discouraging. But we are not without hope. We are not without hope. Yeah. When I think of when I think about impact on racial justice, it's like, I'm glad that I believe that ultimately God is going to bring about justice, because I don't see justice happening in the United States. And the fact that gloves were distributed that provide these painful shocks to people supposedly finding all the illegal immigrants and getting them out of the country, the illegal police force, I will say, that just makes no sense. Even because the people that are being targeted are not necessarily the wrongdoers, right? They're not the criminals that was touted as this is what this administration was going to do. This administration was going to go after the criminals and those who are making our communities unsafe. But where I feel unsafe is not the immigrants. It's the ICE agents. It's this government and this government that is very punitive. If our elected leader has a hissy fit, right? If his pride is hurt, his ego is challenged, very punitive, and just going after people to massage his own ego or to prove that he is a world leader, I don't see this government as being a good representation for working towards racial justice. And in fact, the message that I hear supporting that came out supporting the MAGA movement was, you know, whites have been taken advantage of. All this diversity stuff, whites are now on the low end of the totem pole, and we need to take our country back. That's why it's Make America Great Again. We need to take our country back, and we need to reestablish white supremacy. And you see that with the removal of, you know, the names of ethnic heroes off of military bases, statues, portraits taken down. I mean, he even moved, won't even acknowledge that President Obama was president and taking portraits down. And I don't see racial justice as being even a, I'm going to say it, but I'm not going to do it, policy. It's just like, no, we're not for it. What we're for is reestablishing white supremacy.
Yeah, it's really turned. I was trying to find a way that how do I understand racial justice, church renewal in a Trump America. And I was trying to look back in history in which there was some parallel. And the only thing that I could come back to is how Germany changed because they were coming out of World War I, and they got their clock clean, and the German people felt, you know, dispirited. They felt less than. And here comes a man who says, I can make you great again. I can find you an enemy, and I can make everything better for you if you would just give me all the power that you have and give it totally to me, and I will remake it in a way in which he presents this vision that of how Germany can be back on top again. And I think in some ways that's what happened in 2015, 2016. Is that America felt that they were weak and that they were losing their grip on not only how they appeared in the world, but also inside. And I think that it's always about, and I think you're right, Michelle, that it's always about the inside game, how people are using what they felt they've been wounded. They've been had. They've been told that they're suckers. They've been told that somebody's taken something from them. And it shuts away this internal self-examination that my problems are always outside of me and never a part of inside of me. And I think any president represents really the soul of what that nation is. And it represented a people who were angry, but they didn't know who to be angry at. Hmm. And Trump gave them someone to be angry at rather than examine or to go back to. I mean, we're now hearing that to have empathy is to be woke. Right? I mean, that, right.
Well, or you to know the truth of history, right?
Well, you mean that the value of Jesus is a bad thing? That something that Jesus totally perpetuates throughout his ministry is now considered a vice. And so we see this totally turned upside down. And Chung, I would really like you to kind of say a little bit about Bo Goldswat and how those things that he evaluated about how a country turns in on itself or becomes, because he does that with South Africa, because he's and how that became easily the vision for how I deal with my national pain, national loss.
Right.
Would be very, very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about Bob Goldswat. He was a Dutch economist, and he's passed away now. But he wrote a book called Idols of Our Time back in 1984. So it's obviously
Wow, 1984.
So wow. Way back when, right? It's quite a while ago. Way back, before any of this, before, you know, any of these happens. Anyway, so he talked about idols and idolatry. And he talks about how idols can turn into create ideologies. But back even in that book already, and this was when I was reading it, and it was quite fascinating. I would just read this little quote here by Gao Zuat. He was talking about the dangers of certain things, and he was talking about America, even though he wasn't American. But he says, today, this is back in 1984, he says, right? Today, in 1984, as violence increases and the economic upheaval gets worse, voices reminiscent of those in Germany that you talk about, Reggie, in the 30s cry for a strong leader to restore law and order, reinstate full economic liberty, and these are his words, make America great again, by means of legislation, the media, strong security force, because, you know, for is not communism on the rise everywhere? You know, that's the bogeyman, right? Communism everywhere. Mm-hmm. So we got to protect against communism. Mm-hmm. These cries certainly carry some ideological traits, is what he's saying. He was analyzing some of the trends back then already in America, 1984. These cries certainly carry some ideological traits. If the main interest of policy is to preserve the greatness and superiority of America, if love is equated with love for America, and if American interests determine what is good and what is just, then a nationalist ideology, a civil religion, is at work. The national flag is honored as the expression of what gives life ultimate meaning. It can become a symbol of idolatry. Right? That's unquote. That's what he wrote back then already in 1984. And it's just amazing that he is so prescient that he uses that very phrase, make America great again. So what he says is that also his analysis is that when you can make something good, right? Right. Like the need to preserve our national identity or the need to preserve our group identity.
Something national
that is
or,
kind of good, right. Yeah, and turn it into an idol. And when it becomes an idol, it becomes the all-important goal or end that we all have to achieve by whatever means necessary. When the end becomes justify the means, then you could start having it become an ideology. And when you become an ideology, one of the things that ideologies do is that, ends justify the means, any means become possible, and then the good values or good virtues get redefined because they have to justify their actions. Sometimes they do bad things, and so they will then redefine the bad things they do as good things.
As good.
And then things that opposes their goal get redefined as bad. And so this is why, like, empathy, it gets in the way of us achieving and make America great again. So we got to now label and redefine empathy as something bad, as a sin. That's a sign of ideology at work, not Christianity at work. That's a sign of idolatry at work. That's what Gauss-Watt's analysis is saying. And this will happen in South Africa too.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Segregation became a good thing, or we're supposed to segregate, you know, kind of thing, as opposed to seeing it as a bad thing. It get redefined. The values get redefined. It just all get distorted because to serve the idol that they have.
Yeah. That is so prophetic. Be written in 1984.
84.
So prophetic. 84, yeah. Right? To be prophetic for what is going on now in the United States and perhaps in other countries as well, but seeing it just like up close, and this is no longer just a history lesson.
Yes.
And so when we think about this, you know, what a Trump America is doing for church renewal, it almost begs the question, well, what church are we talking about? Are we talking about the Christian church, or are we talking about the church of Trump? Which church are we? Which church are we talking about? And what is it going to look like? And then when we talk about the changing these values, changing the good things to the bad things, when we think about racial justice, then racial justice is no longer a good thing, because if it's racial justice, we have to tend to the well-being and the flourishing of all, especially the least of these, especially the economically oppressed, especially those fleeing political persecution, especially those who, by our practices in the United States, have caused harm in other people. We've destroyed other economies or come close, or even helped to corrupt other leaders. But yet, we don't want to pay the consequences in terms of caring well for the people who are fleeing their countries, partly because of the mess that we have made. That's a scary place to be. But we are not without hope, because the church renewal that we're looking forward to is not the church of Trump, not white nationalism, not this ideology other than the gospel of Jesus Christ. And for that, we have hope. Well, do either of you have one more thing that you're just waiting to say? Otherwise, we're going to wrap this conversation up. Otherwise, we're going to be going for a while.
Maybe I'll just tag on that word hope and just end with an image of hope that Bob Gauswat in that book also wrote about. Because we remember that Jesus in the book of Revelation called himself the morning star, right? Jesus said, I'm the morning star. And so Gauswat kind of said, this is an image of hope. And I'll read it from him too, again, from Gauswat. The biblical image of hope is the morning star. The morning star often appears between 2 and 3 p.m. or 3 a.m. at night, when the darkness is complete and the faintest sign of morning is not yet visible. So small that it threatens to vanish, the star seems unable to vanquish the overpowering darkness. Yet, when you see the morning star, you know that the night has been defeated. For the morning star pulls... Yeah, for the morning star pulls the morning in behind it, just as certainly as Jesus pulls the kingdom in behind him. I am the morning star. These were Jesus' last words to us. That's the hope that we have.
I want to shout and throw my shoe at you. Which is a good thing. It's a good thing, John. It's a good thing.
Or stand up and say, you better shut up. Yeah.
You better hush your mouth.
It's a good thing. Chung, thank you. I think that is a beautiful way to end our conversation today. Thank you so much. And to our listeners, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Antioch Podcast. It's our prayer that these conversations about biblical anti-racism will inspire you to live countercultural lives marked by both justice and mercy while walking humbly with God. If you like this episode, don't forget to like and subscribe. Until next time, keep the faith and keep fighting for justice. This has been the Antioch Podcast.
Amen. Good. Amen.
You've been listening to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. You can help us by spreading the word about the Antioch Podcast, by praying for us, sharing this episode on your social media, writing us a review, or supporting us financially by clicking on the support link on our website, www.antiochpodcast.org. Music, editing, and production of the Antioch Podcast provided by Eric Nykamp. Thanks for listening, and thank you for your support.